Welcome to Health Cetera's podcast. Current research points to the direct impact of the environment and environmental exposures on human health. Wide-ranging environmental issues, from greenhouse gas emissions to microplastics found in food and water, all hold considerable weight in determining the health of our population and collectively pose the world's greatest public health threat. On this podcast, Dr. Diana Mason, registered nurse and host of this program, discusses environmental issues and global mitigation efforts with Dr. Ruth McDermott Levy, a registered nurse, professor of nursing, and co-director of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment at Villanova University. In November, Dr. McDermott Levy attended the 26th Annual Climate Change Conference in Scotland, during which representatives from each of the UN member nations explored mitigation efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and lessen their adverse effects on the environment. This interview first aired on Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio on December 8th, 2021.
I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program. And yeah, we've got some stormy weather up here in the Catskills, but globally, climate change is with us. It is of a huge concern. Now, in November, the United Nations held the 26th Climate Change Conference, or COP26, in Glasgow, Scotland. One of the participants was Dr. Ruth Levy. Dr. Ruth Levy is a registered nurse and professor of nursing at Villanova University School of Nursing and co-director of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment. And I'm really pleased to have Ruth on Health Cetera in the Catskills today because she attended that conference on climate change that the United Nations held. And I'm really eager to talk to you, Ruth, today and find out what that was all about. Thank you for joining me today.
It's good to be here, Diana. Thanks for inviting me.
So you're a nurse and you're co-director of this center, Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the environmental health work that you've been doing as a nurse and why you're involved in the climate change work.
Well, For me, the environment has always been a huge influence on people's health. And so as I progressed in my career, I saw where I could really leverage that and address the impact of the environment on people's health. And so that's what I've done, especially as a nurse faculty member and researcher. I am the co-director of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment, and that is part of a national network of pediatric environmental health specialty units. There are 10 in the United States. There are only two that are nurse-run, and one is at Villanova, the other is at Emory. And they're broken up by the 10 regions that Department of Health and Human Services has divided the country into 10 regions. I'm in Region 3, which is Pennsylvania, New Jersey. Excuse me, no, you guys are New Jersey. Pennsylvania.
No, we're New York.
I know, but you're in that region.
Ah, I see.
Pennsylvania, Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, and D.C. is Region 3. For you all in Region 2, it is New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. Mm-hmm. And so what I do in that role is that, and it's the same in New York, is we provide education to healthcare providers and to the public about environmental risks for children and their families. And then we also do consultations, so if people have concerns about some environmental exposure, they can call their local or their regional pediatric environmental health specialty unit. So the one in New York is located at Mount Sinai Medical Center with the School of Medicine. And I do have that phone number if you'd like me to give it to your listener.
That would be great.
Okay. It is, it's toll-free, and it's 1-866-266-2201. And again, it's 1-866-265-6201, and that they can address any environmental issues that you may have related to, again, children and families.
So let me make sure I have that right. 866-265-6201.
Correct.
And that's the center at Mount Sinai that you can get information and assistance if you think your child has had some environmental exposures.
Correct. Or, you know, any questions about possibly purchasing an item or you know, what the risk, environmental risk may be to children.
So, most people would think when you think of the environment and the impact on children, they would go straight to lead. And so I think there's been a lot of publicity around lead poisoning in children from the environment, whether it's from lead paint or, you know, it was lead in gasoline that got out into the environment, et cetera. So what other kinds of exposures do you think, what are the other top exposures that people might not be thinking about?
Plastics. And the risks of that. And we're also learning more about microplastics that can get into food and water. PFAS, which is a chemical that stays in the environment. It does not break down. And so people are having problems with their water being contaminated by that. There actually is the Academy of there used to be the Academy of Medicine, the Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine is coming out with a report this spring for healthcare providers of what they can do to protect their patients related to PFAS.
I want to follow up with you on another program and have you really talk in depth about some of these things, because I have so many questions now that have just popped up, exploded in my head because of this. So I just want people to be aware that there are a number of exposures, and let's do another program that we'll talk in more depth on that. Sorry to open that can of worms. It's really important. It's really important. So what got you to participate in the UN's 26th Climate Change Conference last month?
My research has shifted. I was doing work initially related to fracking in Pennsylvania, because we are an extraction state. And the more I dug into that, the more I realized we needed to go more upstream of fracking. Extracts methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. And so if we can address climate change, then we can reduce the fracking. So I was kind of thinking that way. So I got more involved in looking at climate change. And the truth is, this is our greatest global public health threat. And I know earlier, you were talking about where Delaware County in New York is with COVID. And although there's days it doesn't seem like it, we will get past COVID. Mm-hmm. But climate change will remain a problem throughout all of our lifetimes, because we've already committed to enough greenhouse gas that things have changed, and we're observing that. And so that's what brought me to looking at climate change. And so I've done some work related to educating faculty on how to implement climate change into the nursing curricula, because we need a healthcare profession that is prepared for what's coming. And I've moved recently into looking at factors that influence mortality or what is making people die early related to climate change. And I'm also looking at community-based adaptation to climate change. So they're the two things that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, I just want to share with listeners that indeed the nursing community, medicine have very much embraced that climate change is a public health issue. It is a health issue for all of us, whether it's on a micro level or whether it's macro, whether it's major weather events that devastate whole communities, or whether it's more particulate matter in the air for whatever reason with people with respiratory problems. So it's a wide range of health problems. And so I was very pleased to see that Ruth was there. So tell us about the conference itself. What was it trying to achieve? And what did you do there?
Okay. So, to do that, first, I just want to kind of explain COP a little bit.
Good.
It's the Committee of the Parties, and what that is, it's the representatives from the UN member nations that come together to negotiate agreements or treaties to reduce those greenhouse gases that are causing such a problem. And essentially, it's the COP meeting, which happens every year, so they met 26 times, but they skipped last year because of COVID. It's divided into essentially four segments. So there's the blue zone, which you need a pass to attend. And I was there as an observer, so I was able to attend this particular COP. I also attended COP 24 in Katowice, Poland, in 2018, but I didn't have observer status. So with observer status, you can go to the blue zone events, which are, there's two parts of that. One is the conference session of the delegates that are negotiating these treaties to keep our temperature below 1.5 degrees Celsius, which compared to pre-industrial age. So that's our goal. And then the other part of the blue zone is really like a conference. It's different sessions from both national leaders and ministries of health and the World Health Organization had a pavilion there for sessions. And at the conference part, you can really talk to both national leaders. Rachel Levine was there from HHS. And so
Health
you can
and
talk
Human
to
Services.
Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Thank you so much. Yes, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And she's heading up a special division of climate change within that department, which is new. So the U.S. government is getting more on board and addressing these issues. And then the other part of COP is a green zone where anyone can go to, and there's sessions there as well. And so I attended those both in Scotland this time and when I was in Poland. And then there's outside protesters and speakers. And really, I think all of them are important so that everyone has a voice in this. Certainly the delegates' meetings are the decision makers, but if we all speak out, we can make a difference. So I think they're all important. And then the last piece of that, I mean, I know there's four sections, but the kind of the fifth section is the Saturday between. It's a two-week meeting, so the Saturday between, there is a Global Climate and Health Summit, and that is sponsored by the Global Climate and Health Alliance, and so that's really where most of the health people come together and talk about this. The interesting thing about this particular COP, COP 26, is this was the first time that health had any kind of notation. There was actually a day of health, and as I said, WHO, the World Health Organization, had a pavilion. That's the first time they've ever had a pavilion in the COP, and we just said it's our greatest global public health threat. So, you know, yes, healthcare providers are on this, but our global organizations aren't, as far as the impact of health. So they're starting to recognize that. And it is important, again, you know, I know you have a fair number of nurses in your audience, that we make sure that, you know, our policymakers know that this is important so that then they can take it to the global meetings.
So what were your takeaways from these 2 weeks?
I believe it or not, I am a very hopeful person. initially, you know, we all went there with a lot of hope that this time was going to be different, and it not necessarily was different, but right before this fall, before the COP meeting, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the UN group that they're tasked by the UN, it's the world's leading climate scientists, come together and issue reports about where we are with climate change. And so in September, they issued their sixth assessment. It's a three-part report, and so they issued the first part of that this fall. And they came out and said that the climate is changing much more rapidly than they thought in earlier reports. And fossil fuels are directly responsible, and that was kind of an exciting moment for those of us who are in this space, because we knew they were, but finally a major, intergovernmental organization or report said it. And this report, I actually know someone who was part of an earlier IPCC FCC report, and he said that to be able to put it in the document, you need to come to consensus from all the scientists. So, you know, this is heavily vetted, and for that to come out and say fossil fuels are responsible was a big deal. So we all went to COP thinking, this is it. You know, we're going to turn everything around and you know, everything will come out greener and more beautiful when we leave Scotland. But that didn't really happen. What came out, it's called the Glasgow Climate Pact. What they did do was they have the language of phasing out coal, because all of us hoped they would say we're going to stop coal, but it will be phased out. And over 100 nations pledged to reduce methane emissions by 30%, which is really exciting because, as I said, methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. And that methane, we would see a change more rapidly because of the half-life of all these gases. And carbon stays in the atmosphere a very long time, but methane doesn't. So that is good that we're going to reduce that. And then 130 nations agreed to stop or reverse deforestation. So they're the positives. Out of COP26. For those of us in health, and actually I guess this influences all of us because we all use the health system, 50 countries, including the UK and the US, signed on to support climate resilience and low-carbon health systems as part of the COP26 health program. So that was through the World Health Organization. The nice thing to know about this is Healthcare Without Harm, is a leader in that, making sure that we go to low-carbon health systems. And the co-founder of Healthcare Without Harm is Charlotte Brody, who is a nurse. So when she formed that organization many years ago.
Yes, many years ago. I know her. Yes.
Yeah. She had global impact, and I don't know that she anticipated that, but that is an exciting piece, and it is good that health systems are going to be, you know, more sustainable.
So let me just pause there and ask you to, and just tell listeners, I'm talking with Dr. Ruth McDermott-Levy, a registered nurse, professor of nursing, and co-director of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment at Villanova University, and she attended the 26th United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow, Scotland, in November. Could you just say a few words about what does it mean to be a low-carbon health system? What are the kinds of things that need to happen for a system to be low-carbon?
Well, I mean, it gets into energy sources, and not only the energy that the health system itself uses, but thinking about their fleet of cars and trucks and how people get to work. So, you know, it's really looking at the whole system and its impact. There are offsets that hospitals can do. And one of the sessions that I went to at COP26 was about net zero. And I thought, oh, this will be really interesting to hear, you know, what can we do to reduce our carbon footprint. And it really got into the greenwashing of net zero, that essentially, so we need to be careful, you know, with health systems that they, and any organization that wants to reduce its impact, that they make sure that they're actually doing that and not shifting their carbon footprint somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's really what they discuss. And what, when that happens, the people that pay the greatest toll are low-income people of color and indigenous populations. And so, you know, climate change is such a complex issue because it influences every single aspect of the way we live and work and even recreation. It influences everything. So thinking about, you know, truly, truly reducing your emissions and not shifting it somewhere else. And so there are nurses that are working on this and being part of actually leading sustainable hospital systems. And so that's really what it's about, is total overall reducing emissions.
And Ruth, when you talk about making sure that we're reducing our impact and not just shifting the problem elsewhere, I've been hearing a lot about electric cars and the fact that the lithium batteries themselves and how we mine lithium and how we manage lithium and the competition for it has its own impact on the environment.
Yes, exactly. And so, I think especially in the United States, I think we're out for a quick fix for things. I mean, that tends to be kind of our culture. And so, you know, people are looking for things that will address an issue and then they can just move forward. And so we really need to think about what is that impact, the overall impact and the life cycle of, you know, where we get the materials from. But we also, we're not going to have perfection. And so we need to really, when we make those decisions, we need to say, okay, but in the long run, would this, you know, be better? So if you are going to own the car for, like me, 15 years, I don't believe in purchasing cars often, but so, you know, if you're going to own the car for a long period of time and it's going to be on the road, perhaps that mining impact would not be as severe. So, and you need to think about that for everything that you do, of what is the overall impact and you know, would I, you know, if I make this purchase and I use it long enough, then, or can I repair it and you know, or reuse it in some way, then that would have a lesser impact. So we can't be stopped by things that we hear in the news. We just need to be able to really educate ourselves. And don't ask me whether you should buy an electric vehicle or not, because I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, I'm with you. Particularly up in the mountains, I had a mechanic say to me, the salt will just destroy the car. So your takeaway then, your conclusion from what you're saying and what I'm hearing is that there's progress that's been made. It was not what is aggressive as many people thought we needed to take. Is that fair?
Yes, that is very true. The beauty of kind of roaming around COP, part of it was like a conference. So in conferences, there's a lot of networking, and I got to speak to a lot of people from different backgrounds, both NGOs, which are non-governmental organizations, and or people that work for government organizations that could, you know, talk off record. And so one of the things that was said to me that was really powerful for me was that one of the reasons that Brazil was holding back on the deforestation issue is that it influences crop yield. If they had to put in more forest, then, you know, it would influence farming because of the shade and things. And so when crop yield is down, parents need to send their children out to do farming to help bring in income and food to the home. And so one of the reasons Brazil was dragging their feet about the deforestation piece was they were concerned about the children of Brazil's opportunity for education and to move forward. And we all know how important education is and its influence on health. And so for me, that was such a big learning piece. I personally believe the majority of the countries want to do the right thing, but they also need to address the real-time issues for their country. And I'm a big person, when I look at problems, I always want to know my barriers first. And that, you know, is one of the barriers, so that we need to be able to address that and support that issue in some way so that then Brazil can deal with their deforestation issue. And there are many things like that that would come up. And it was a real education for me of, okay, so we can't just, you know, go in and go, all right, we're going to get rid of all fossil fuels and, you know, have this lovely clean economy without addressing those real life issues for the people on the ground.
Ruth, if people want more information about COP26, the United Nations Climate Change Conference this year, or your work on the environment, how can they find it?
For me, you can contact me through Villanova University, and I'm fine with people emailing me. So you could just Google Villanova College of Nursing, Ruth McDermott Levy, and you'll find me there. As far as finding information about climate change and COP, there's two places I would recommend. You can go to the United Nations Framework on Climate Change. So you can go right there, and there's a bunch of information, you know, whatever you're interested in. And then also, I am a member of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, and that's the organization that I went with. And they, for healthcare providers and nurses, on their website, you can find a lot of information, and a lot of information about what we are doing at COP as well.
And that was the Alliance for?
The Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments.
Of Nurses for
and
Healthy.
And again, you can Google that.
Great. Well, Dr. Ruth McDermott Levy, registered nurse, professor of nursing, and co-director of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment at Villanova University. I'm so glad you went to COP26. This is fascinating. I could probably talk all day with you about it. But thank you so much for coming on to Health Center in the Catskills and sharing your experience with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to a podcast of Health Center in the Catskills. For more podcasts and discussions of important health issues and policies affecting health, go to Health Center's website and blog at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's www.healthmediapolicy.com. This podcast was produced by Dr. Diana Mason and production assistant Kai Volsey.